Good afternoon. You're listening to Praxis here on KYRS. I'm your host, Taylor, and today's show is an interview that I took 2 weekends ago. I was down in Portland, Oregon, managed to meet some interesting people and get some interviews while I was there. The show today is kind of going to center on a topic we've talked about a lot on the show over the past many years, but specifically over this past year or two, which is immigration and how to show solidarity as immigrant communities are threatened. So I'm going to start off with the interview, and then I'll have some more information about local struggles, local efforts, and then also some best practices from around the country when we're looking at places that are, you know, we're all facing these same issues, but it looks a little bit different in every region. So I'm going to share some of that for you as well. Some wonderful things that happened on this day in history and more. So without much further ado, I'll introduce this interview. This is with Francisco Aguirre. He is, as he says right at the beginning of the interview, undocumented, unafraid activist and organizer working with day laborer communities, working on immigrant solidarity projects and all kinds of other things like that in Portland, Oregon. He's got a really interesting story, and I will let him share it with you now. Like I said, I'll be back on. If you miss any part of the show, you can always catch the podcast, which I will post later this evening. So stay tuned for more information about that, and thanks for listening. Enjoy the interview.
Okay, yeah. My name is Francisco Aguirre. I'm from El Salvador. Been living in U.S. for 22 years, and I'm still undocumented and unafraid. I'm an organizer. My whole life since I was 7, I was already up in communities in my country, running in villages, you know, organizing people. And up to this point, that's what I do, organizing for human rights, migrant rights, and workers' rights.
Wow. So maybe we should start. I want to know more about the organizing you did when you were 7.
When I was 7, I was a kid, just with shorts, no shoes, no shirt. My job was to invite communities to come to a late meeting at night where only a candlelight was in the middle of those meetings, because we wasn't allowed to have meetings. The government was killing our people in the villages. So part of my job was to securely deliver the message of a meeting that it was going to happen without nothing really in writing. The only message that I delivered was in a piece of paper under my tongue, wrapped in plastic, and in case police or military stop me, I supposed to swallow it so they don't find out about the meeting, because other way or people can get killed, detained, disappear. All that was going on, what's happening in my country.
How do you think that affected you? I mean, politically, obviously, you're just going to be political forever now, it seems. But
yeah, there's no way for me to go the other way. I think it helped me to identify the truth in this world. I think it helped me to find a real life. Not exactly a life with justice, because I don't feel like there is justice in this world. But it helped me identify that there is people who's willing to do the good things, and there is people who's willing to go against, you know, our own values.
Cool. So then you came to the U.S., I'm assuming when you were still a kid.
Yeah, I was around, I believe I was maybe 16 or 17.
Okay.
Yeah, and when I ran away from El Salvador.
So how did that work for you, and what was kind of your entry into organizing here in the States?
Well, when I ran away from El Salvador, my plan wasn't actually to come to U.S. I was planning to stay, you know, in a country like Guatemala, Honduras, close by. But it was actually dangerous for me at the same time, because the all Central America country was working together at that time. So I ended up getting to Mexico. Mexico also was very hard to live there. So finally I decided to cross to United States, thinking that it will be a better life than El Salvador. But when I got to Portland, I find out that there was a lot of issues going on here. Workers, you know, was getting employed, people standing at the corner waiting for work for somebody to hire them and not getting paid. So I was a day laborer. I started doing that work, you know, standing up in corners waiting for somebody to hire. And then I decided that it was time to do something about it. So I started organizing day laborers, standing up for their rights. Mm-hmm. And soon we got immigration doing raids in the corner. Community got together. We stopped those raids. And that's how I began being what I love to do, organizing in Portland. You know?
Wow. So I guess with doing the day labor work, what was the pattern like of immigration raids and stuff? I think people are paying attention to it right now with Trump, but obviously it's something that's always been going on in that community. So have there been waves of activity? Like, what does that look like?
You know, it is true. We always been having trouble with immigration laws in this country. Before Trump, a lot of deportation was already happening, but in silent. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows. Nobody was really putting attention on that. There was a few organizations that they was working on defending migrant rights, but there was not much noise about. But the reality is millions of people was getting, you know, kicked out of U.S. Family separation was already happening. But it is true that with Trump administration, it got pretty ugly, you know. He's separating kids, which I don't think it should be happening the way he's been doing it. Before, they was allowed to stay with their parents together, and you know. Now they don't. And I feel like people who... White supremacists, for example, they become more public with Trump. Racist people are up there, and they don't scare to say I'm a racist. That's what Trump create, you know. People not afraid to act against immigrants, because Trump, it's also doing the same thing. It's attacking, publicly attacking the migrants and doing laws that it's only focused on migrants, not to secure, like he says, secure communities. It's nothing about safety here. Mm-hmm. It's about going against immigrants because we did not create September 11. And after September 11, everything changed.
Mm-hmm. So what... you're doing a lot of different organizing stuff right now, but can you talk a little bit about the TPS campaign and just a little mm-hmm. bit of what that is for mm-hmm. people who don't know or who have mm-hmm. maybe just heard it floating around?
Yes, I'm going to be talking from a point of somebody who's helping, because we want to make sure that the TPS holders are the one who are actually doing this job. But yes, I am volunteering on helping that TPS campaign that it begin with National Day Labor Network and CARESEN from Los Angeles. Those two organizations got together and decided that it was time to help the TPS holders. They provide the tools needed, and the TPS holders are actually the ones who are doing the job. Mm-hmm. They got their committees. They organize assemblies. They go to Washington, D.C. to do legislation, and, you know, they do whatever they can. Recently, we were gathering in Washington, D.C. It was beautiful, a big march. It was 5 days of planning to next steps that we will be taking up. We are suing Trump because he canceled the TPS, the Temporary Protection Status, for Central America, Haiti, Honduras, also Nicaragua and Sudan. And we believe that his actions wasn't right. He approached that, you know, in a way that it can be very racial, you know, profiling. So that's what TPS campaign is. And every state, you know, where there is TPS holders, mm-hmm. we are forming committees.
So. Cool. And so with TPS, temporary protected status, who mostly has TPS? Like, what are the demographics of?
Mm-hmm. So they create TPS for many reasons. For example, earthquake in Central America. So they give TPS to those Central America. And that's Honduras, Guatemala, Nicaragua. Not Guatemala, El Salvador. Mm-hmm. And also crisis. For example, there is a political conflict in a country where it involves war, then they'd also offer the TPS to people. And that's like Haiti, you know. Many areas in Africa are getting that TPS also. Venezuela's getting offered right now TPS. We believe that's crazy that this government is canceling the TPS for other countries that actually need it and creating a crisis in another country and saying, let's offer TPS, you know, to those people. And so mm-hmm.
to make themselves look better for wanting to go in and do whatever they want to go in and do.
Mm. That's what U.S.
Great. So so the Day Labor Network is doing a lot of that.
Yes.
Organizing.
Day Labor, the Andilon National Day Labor Network, is an amazing organization. It's not only local, but national and international. I'm very proud to be part of the board. And they are the one who managed the campaign, Not One More, Eyes Out of L.A., also the campaign against Joe Arpaio in Arizona, and now doing the TPS. They're pretty active. They're doing really good. Right now, we probably opened the first Day Labor Center in El Salvador. And next will be Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras.
Wow.
Yes.
So that's like full circle for you.
Yes.
To be organizing in El Salvador again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably I won't be able to really go to El Salvador mm-hmm. because the dangers mm-hmm. that it represents for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very proud that there is people who are willing to take mm-hmm. the challenge and do that job up there. Mm-hmm. And I'm following the same steps. I'm working to create a nonprofit right now. Viva, Inclusive Migrant Network, it's a brand new organization. It will be here in Portland, with the idea to spread to Mexico and Central America to work with people, you know, up there.
Cool. So what do you think, I mean, obviously, even just with immigration right now, there's so many different issues and so much chaos
mm-hmm.
politically, but what do you think, what's your vision for, like, what the U.S. could do and what immigrants in the U.S. could do? What do you think this movement looks like in the best case scenario?
Mm-hmm. You know, to be honest, I believe that U.S. won't do anything. But if they're willing to do it, you know, first of all, they can stop investing those billions of dollars at the border. That money can be used for something good. School programs, for example, in Oregon. We need that. Schools need funds. Kids, you know, their lunch program. Oh my God, it's unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
They can invest in that. They can invest in education. They can invest on communities here in Portland and around the nation to really have safe communities, you know. But they're not doing that. They prefer to invest in something that it doesn't work. Borders, walls won't help no one. No matter what the president, what U.S. do at the border, people will still come in. They will find a way to do it. Because, I mean, there is a necessity going on in other countries. Why not invest also the money in those countries? And when I say invest, I mean help, because U.S. love to go and say, yeah, we're here to help. But what they do, it's actually taking advantage and stealing everything from our countries. We don't want that to happen, right? If all the other countries are with freedom and enough work, nobody will immigrate, you know. They prefer to stay in their countries. For example, me. I wish I can be in El Salvador, but I can't, you know. It's not a choice, you know. It's a decision that I have to make at that moment to move away from El Salvador to save my life. And living in U.S., I feel threat also being here, you know, because the government, they don't let you live in peace, especially right now. Immigrants, if we work together, if we stand up, I know there is a fear. I know there is a lot of possibilities to get detained and be deported. But we don't have nothing to lose at this point. We must stand up, get organized, know our rights, and be ready to stand in front of ICE no matter what, you know. Because they take advantage of us when they see that we are afraid. It's a nature of human being to be afraid, yes. But let's use that fear, you know, to empower ourselves and stop ICE. We can work through counseling programs or laws that they don't defend our communities. And we have to start thinking and act as a U.S. citizen. No matter what other people say, you are undocumented. We are living in this country. We are part of the economy of this country. We work hard, you know, every day.
A huge part.
Yes.
Yeah.
So why not get organized and fight, you know, for our better stability for everyone, equal, you know, stability for everyone. I think migrants, we have a lot of work to do. And I'm proud to be of that change, and I invite everyone to join us. You know? No matter which nationality are you, you are a human being, and you deserve a better life. You deserve freedom, and we won't get that freedom if we don't fight together.
So what would you say? I know there's a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of people who want to support, who are scared, who aren't immigrants, but who see what's been going on, especially since Trump, and who want to be supportive and who want to help. What would you say are the main, what are the best ways, like what do you think the best kind of solidarity looks like from people who do have U.S. citizenship, who were born here?
That's a good question, and thank you for asking. You know, a lot of time there is people who want to help, but at the end we end up doing the job and be the face of the migrant struggle. And I think what we have to do is provide the tools, but let the migrants be the face, you know, of their own struggle. I like to use, you know, phrase, nothing about us without us. You know, let the migrants be the leader of their struggle, and you are the one who's behind supporting that struggle, providing all the tools. I think U.S. are doing pretty good job on standing up, you know, for migrant rights. And what I recommend is stand behind the migrant rights and let them do the rest. Why I'm saying this? Because a lot of time, when we don't give on a struggle the right face, it become a fake struggle. It become unnecessary steps that we are taking toward defending migrant rights. Why? Because people don't see it as a legitimate struggle, and especially migrants. They don't want to get involved. Mm. Why? Because they feel like they don't belong to that struggle. Mm. Because they feel like there's no welcoming space for them. There is many times where meetings are conducted in an English language only and not Spanish. That way we are saying you are not welcome because you are not speak the language, but I'm the one who's going to defend the mm-hmm. migrants. So that need to be changed mm-hmm. If we want to see Latinos get involved, you know. We understand language. English is the first language here. But when we say that, we have to be very careful, you know, because it's actually it's a country of many languages, mm-hmm. you know, and it's a country built by migrants. Mm-hmm. So let's do the struggle together and let's paint the right picture, you know, mm-hmm. for the moment.
Yeah, kind of flip that.
Yes, dynamic. It needs to happen. When that happens, it will be amazing, you know. A lot of good things will happen, and our community will be more happy mm-hmm. to see that.
Yeah. So then I guess also we're obviously, you know, I'm sharing this from Spokane, mm-hmm. and you and I talked mm-hmm. a little bit about what we're dealing with the Greyhound and with Border yeah. Patrol and ICE in our community. And the fear is definitely mm-hmm. real, and that's yeah. kind of dynamic in trying to do that work that, you know, I don't fully understand, but I empathize with. But what are some examples, like, I mean, you shared the examples of the work you're doing, but what are some cities that you think are getting it right in the U.S. that mm-hmm. that other places can learn from and mm-hmm. look to?
Well, if you look Portland, California, I mean, people are working hard on doing the change. And I'm going to be talking about Portland. Portland being an example city for other states. Abolish ICE, Occupy ICE. When we start organizing the Occupy ICE here in Portland, we blocked a building, and for 3 months, you know, there was no ICE activity. We did not let them do their job. I think that was amazing, and it inspired others to do it around the nation. They follow our steps. Passing on sanctuary law. That's awesome. And I heard that Spokane did a resolution.
For the station, yeah. What does the sanctuary law in Portland look like? Because I know the word sanctuary is getting mm-hmm. thrown out a lot yes. on all sides, that, you yes. know, both as a scare tactic, mm-hmm. all sanctuary cities, and immigrants are running everything, you know, and but then also people saying something's a sanctuary when maybe it's not a clear use. So what does it mean? Mm-hmm.
So, in yes,
resolution?
You know, for those confused about that, sanctuary law is actually more secure for everybody, not just migrants. Why? Because when a crime is being committed and there is an immigrant community who can help clarify that, usually they don't participate because they scare the police will detain them and ICE will take them in custody. Mm-hmm. So a sanctuary law, what will do is allow those migrants to explain, you know, and be part of the investigation to clarify that, and without being afraid to be detained. Who's going to be help? If I'm a U.S. citizen and I'm the one affected, but this individual is undocumented, is not willing to help because afraid to ICE, I'm the one who's getting more affected. Mm-hmm. But if I let that person come forward without any fear of being detained, I mean, it will be helping me mm-hmm. as a U.S. citizen. Mm-hmm. If I'm getting involved in an accident, an undocumented people hit my car, I'm not allowed them to have a driver's license because it's undocumented. Mm-hmm. For sure, won't be insurance. I'm the one who's getting affected. Mm-hmm. So by sanctuary law, I mean safety for everyone. Mean ICE not allow in our communities. And when I say ICE, it's the ERO program, which it's enforced the immigration laws, because it disrupted families. It tore families apart, including U.S. citizens, not just undocumented people, you know. So people need to understand that the sanctuary law is not about immigrants. It's about everybody in our communities, no matter what status, immigration status you are under.
Mm-hmm. Good, yeah. So I know we just have a few more minutes to talk, but I usually like to ask people what's making them hopeful lately. But I'm also curious, you said at the beginning that you didn't think there was justice necessarily, and I can see why you'd say that.
Yeah.
What do you think there is? Like, what do you feel like we're moving towards, if not that?
When I say at this moment there is no, I don't see justice, it's because daily we see that there is an attack. There is a group of people who have more than others. We don't share what we have. And when we work in toward justice, we wish to see that one day everybody be equal. Share what you have, including this beautiful land that is divided, you know, and say this is United States of America. Sharing the land because it's belong to everyone. We born with no borders. So working to get justice mean dreaming to one day we will change the mind of those who are actually walking in the darkness. That one day they will come, you know, to the right place and what on the line and with us. But it is right to say that there is no justice in this country, in this world, right now, the way it is at this moment. Just by seeing those kids crying, you know, in a cage, parents getting deported without their kids, I think that's not justice.
No.
And it shouldn't be happening. And it's something that everybody needs to put attention on it. It's not unjust just for those who's getting separated,
mm-hmm.
For those kids in a cages. It also us, you know, and it make responsible, you know, when we don't do nothing. So,
yeah. So, I guess if people are listening, and they've been wanting to get involved in some of these struggles and they haven't. What would you say is a good first step? And then also, what are some more resources for people if they want to learn about the projects you're involved in?
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to invite them to visit OregonViva.org. Also, they can get in touch with me, 503-752-4882, yes. We're having a good project right now, and it's to hold ICE accountable, to cancel the operational permit here in Portland, and something that we committed to do it with all the organizations here in Oregon. And I invite anybody to come and join, you know, join the fight. It will be good.
Yeah, good.
We'll be doing something good, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to add?
I do want to add that about Augustana Lutheran Church, it's an amazing church that it's doing the job to protect migrants and to teach about the rights, you know, of migrants as a human beings. It's the first church in Oregon, actually, who declared church as a sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And the first church who opened the doors, that was for me to allow me to stay and avoid deportation.
Mm-hmm.
So I invite them to visit the church. It's a good place, a lot of things to learn here. And soon we will be conducting a lot of training here at the church.
Cool. Good. Well, thanks so much for talking with me, and thanks for all the work you do.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Again, that interview was recorded actually at Augustana Lutheran Church in Portland on Sunday, March 24th, 2019, just last week, feels like longer ago. And that was Francisco Aguirre. He is an activist, an organizer, an immigrant, as you heard, there in the interview. If you missed any part of that interview and you want to catch the rest, I'll be posting the podcast online later this evening. And you can find it either by going to kyrs.org, finding shows, clicking on Praxis, or you can go directly to soundcloud.com/praxisradio, PRAXISRADIO, or you can type in Praxis Radio into iTunes, Google Play, and all of those other good places. So he shared a lot of information in that interview. And as you know, if you're a regular listener to the show, if you're kind of tuned into these issues in Spokane, you know that we've had a lot of struggles here too. And I can point you back to probably the fall. If you are subscribed to the podcast, or if you're not and you just scroll through either the playlist on the website or the old episodes, I have a few episodes dedicated to the struggle around the intermodal center here in Spokane, where the Greyhound and other bus companies, Jefferson Lines, Northwest Trailways, people often lump it all together as Greyhound, but there's many companies that operate there who have all been allowing Border Patrol to board buses and demand documentation from people. So if you want an in-depth look at that specific issue here in Spokane, I recommend listening to one of those older shows. It's been very confusing for people. It's been very confusing for even people in leadership. The city of Spokane passed an ordinance back in October, basically banning the Border Patrol from that space. The mayor refused to enforce it. The company itself is not really choosing to take a position one way or another, and many individual drivers appear to be really actively cooperating with Border Patrol agents, which I'll share a little bit more about later on. So it backfired in a way, because now the space has been deemed more private than it was by this ordinance, and even some of the efforts of activists to let people know about the situation there in the station have been asked to leave the station. So I thought it would be good to share, to remind people of that, to share some resources to be educated about that locally, and then also to look at some best practices from other places around the country. So yeah, you may have heard just in January, Mohamed El-Sheikhi, who's a pretty well-known at this point comedian based in Portland, he was pulled off of the bus in Spokane, Washington. So our Spokane Intermodal Center went viral on Twitter and all over the place, really. And he shared his experience of being pulled off the bus. He is an asylum seeker, I believe, who's been in the U.S. and been in Portland the entire time, from Libya originally. And he they demanded to see his papers. He produced them. They called someone who confirmed his status, that he was okay to be here. And still they said that they believed his papers were fake and really harassed him for some time outside the bus. So perhaps they didn't realize that he had a significant public platform when they did that. But that story went viral. And another development since, and basically since the ordinance has been passed in the fall, Border Patrols continue to be at the Intermodal Center, perhaps even more than they had been in the past. So this is still very much an issue and something that activists and folks are working on. But it's, as I said, pretty complex here. But so from Greyhound itself, the company, the complexity is that Greyhound's a private company and they can make the choice whether or not to collaborate in this way. And they've chosen to, at least here. But they did put this forward in December, and I think it's interesting. So this is a story from Washington Post by Spencer Sue. I'm just going to share chunks of it verbatim from the story. Greyhound Lines is expanding alerts to passengers about their rights should immigration agents board buses and demand identification and proof of citizenship. The information includes details on how to file civil rights complaints and ways to support a change to federal law about the warrantless stops. The advisories come amid the holiday travel season and as the country's largest motor coach operator and other carriers face an ongoing campaign by civil rights groups, labor unions, and Democratic lawmakers to push back against recent expanded checks by U.S. CPB officials. Greyhound posted a guide December 13th on its website under Travel Info and a section titled Your Rights and Rules on Board. It also has posters with advice set to arrive in bus terminals nationwide, a company spokesman said. A California woman who is a U.S. citizen has asked a California judge in Oakland to order Greyhound to stop allowing agents to board buses, and her lawyers praised the move by the company to get information to passengers. That lawsuit is proceeding. We are pleased that Greyhound has taken a step in the right direction. Darren J. Robbins, whose San Diego law firm represents Rocio Cordova and her claims on behalf of other passengers in California. The bus line's notice in English and Spanish advises customers on a law that allows federal officials on board without a warrant to board without a warrant any intercity bus within 100 miles of any international border. I'm going to interject here to clarify this very contentious 100-mile statement, because many people who live in Spokane, Washington proper realize that there is not a road. These are not land miles to Canada. We are more than 100 miles from the Canadian border. However, it's as the crow flies, it's air miles, which are similar to nautical miles, and that puts Spokane at 92 miles away from the Canadian border, and therefore in the border zone, in air quotes, where 2/3 of the U.S. population live in the border zone. So functionally, it's a great deal of the population of our country in this this zone where these expanded rights are given to federal immigration enforcement. So that's just a little bonus information. The information under a header of USCPB checks also advises passengers to contact Congress to change the law, a shift the company has said it would like to see. The company advises riders they have the right to remain silent, to refuse a search of their belongings, and to not answer questions about citizenship or immigration status. They also have the right to refuse signing paperwork without the advice of a lawyer, the company advises. The notice also advises passengers of their right to record video of immigration officers, but cautions that passengers do not have a right to interfere with agents. Greyhound spokeswoman Crystal Booker said the website change and the posters arriving at terminals were issued to provide increased transparency and out of respect for customers' dignity, privacy, and safety. She added, Greyhound is walking a difficult line between complying with the law and best serving its customers. For this reason, implementation of these actions have taken some time. So there's more in this story, and I will share it in the notes for the podcast, which you can find at all those places I listed earlier. And it's interesting. Again, this story is from December of this past year. I just took the train, which, you know, uses the same, it's in the intermodal center with the Greyhound. I did not see any of those posters. It's possible that they were upstairs and I missed them. Though that's the same type of information, what was listed in that poster campaign and on the website that activists here were distributing materials from the ACLU to passengers with that same information. So I find it very interesting that, you know, the company wants to promote that. It's very interesting. However, throughout, There are some local activists who have been documenting at the station in the wake of the ordinance being passed and everything. And there's some really interesting documentation of the drivers actually taking a very active role alongside Customs and Border Protection, really like cluing them in, giving them information on who these activists are, who are there, pointing people out, sharing people's names and really taking an active role in this enforcement and boarding, which tends to happen in the early evening when the main buses come through. And it's pretty regular. It's a pretty regular occurrence. One agent generally boards, generally with a dog, and begins asking people about their citizenship status, while a second agent blocks the exit at the front. Physically from outside the bus. So it's an intimidating display. It's obviously, you know, just beat it over everyone's head again. It's really feels unconstitutional if you think about the Fourth Amendment to board without, it's not that they're boarding with a specific warrant for a specific person. They're going on and asking supposedly everyone about their citizenship, but there's a lot of reports of racial profiling. There's a lot of reports of language-based profiling, accent profiling. What does your voice sound like? making assumptions about where you were born and then demanding to see proof of who you are based on that, which, I don't know, feels gross to me and probably feels gross to a lot of you too. So, again, it's in flux here locally. There are a lot of places in, as I said, 2/3 of the population of the U.S. lives in the border zone. So there are other communities that are tackling this in different and similar ways. And I'm going to share something from one of them. This is in Rochester, New York, which is a, kind of similarly a regional hub as Spokane. They have done a ton of organizing. They have the Rochester Rapid Response Network, and they put together this video around the time of around the holidays, just in 2018. I think they put it out before Thanksgiving and targeted it towards students who might be going home to their families for the holidays and taking this regional bus and rail system. So I'm going to share that with you because it has a lot of really good information, particularly toward the end, around what you can do if you are traveling by these means, how their network works, and maybe provide some inspiration for people in this region. So I am going to play that for you now.
Hi, I'm Andy, and I'm from the Rochester Rapid Response Network. We are an ally group that is guided by directly affected immigrant families in the area. We were formed to support immigrants facing detention or deportation by engaging in community-based strategic action and public education. So we wanted to share with you one of the ways that you can be in solidarity and an active ally to the immigrant communities in our area while traveling this holiday season. So first, a little background. Under the Trump administration, you may have noticed an increase in anti-immigrant rhetoric as well as immigration enforcement activities. While many people may be familiar with issues at the southern border, such as the refugee caravan, imprisonment of children, as well as family separation. In upstate New York, we are also having a northern border crisis and family separation occurring. The state's dairy and agricultural industry is propped up by the labor of mostly undocumented folks, some of who have been here for 5, 10, 15 years and have settled down with their families. We've also seen an uptick in cases of detention and deportation in Western New York. Oftentimes, these detentions of community members occur when they come into contact with local police officers who decide to do the work of federal immigration agents or work with Border Patrol or Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers, also known as ICE. Routine detentions occur when individuals are attempting to travel for work or visit family by using the only form of transportation available for many of us, which is the Greyhound and Trailways bus station. So this is our ask for you. If you are traveling this holiday season, but specifically if you are using the downtown Rochester Greyhound Trailways bus station, we ask that you witness and possibly document any immigration enforcement activities. So why are we asking you to do this? Well, the Rochester Rapid Response Network is routinely collecting data and information on enforcement activities happening at the bus station. As we witness and document Border Patrol activity, we are seeing that they are decreasing their enforcement and presence, meaning we think we're having an impact. And the more vigilant our community is, the less likely Border Patrol will commit violations of constitutional rights as well as harass our neighbors. We also want to support those who are being harassed and detained by Border Patrol by being a resource for information and documenting any enforcement activities for later use in legal cases or public campaigns. So what is Border Patrol doing at the bus station anyways? Well, Border Patrol is allowed to be active within the 100-mile border zone, which constitutes almost all of New York State. At private transit stations, Border Patrol must have a warrant or consent to board a bus and speak to passengers, otherwise it's unconstitutional. This has been backed up by the ACLU, which explained that Greyhound is not obligated to consent to Border Patrol's warrantless and unjustified raids on buses. We also believe that Border Patrol agents are routinely engaging in racial and ethnic profiling, singling people out for the color of their skin and accents. Since 2005, over 2,700 passengers have been detained at the Rochester Transit Station alone. Here are some things to know. It's important to know your rights. The First Amendment protects your right to record and monitor law enforcement officials as long as you are not interfering with their activities while you're recording. You also have the right to remain silent and tell the agent that you'll only answer questions in the presence of an attorney, no matter your citizenship or immigration status. If you are undocumented, the law does require you to provide information about your immigration status if asked. So generally, an immigration officer cannot detain you without reasonable suspicion. An agent must have specific facts about you that make it reasonable to believe you are committing or committed a violation of immigration or federal law. An immigration officer cannot search you or your belongings without either probable cause or your consent. Probable cause is not your silence and it is not your race or ethnicity. How do you witness and how do you document? Whether you're waiting in line at the bus station or you're already seated on the bus, here's what might happen. Usually more than one officer will approach the bus or board the bus and ask passengers questions about their immigration status or ask them to show them immigration documents. So what can you do? You can remain silent and not respond. You can say out loud, know your rights information to the general bus passengers. You can hand out know your rights information. You can file complaints with the bus company or your local bus station to express your concerns. You can also record Border Patrol activity either through videos or photos. So if you are recording Border Patrol activities with videos or photos, here are some things to keep in mind. Your witnessing and documenting should be focused on the immigration enforcement officers and their activities, not civilians, unless there is a serious situation unfolding. If there is a serious situation unfolding, please feel free to reach out to the Rochester Rapid Response Network. We have an emergency phone number, which you can find on our Facebook page. While you're recording, you should also collect the names and contact info for anyone who is being harassed, detained, or other witnesses at the event if it is possible and safe. Record what the agent does, any violations of constitutional rights, racial ethnic profiling, along with harassment and detainment. If you are filming, try to get the full scene. Film key details such as badges on and officers, street signs, buildings, and landmarks. Let the video speak for itself and remember to share ethically. Think before you live stream on social media and determine if people's identities should be protected. Also, be aware of the GPS settings on your phone. GPS coordinates can trace back to your images and videos to identify who filmed the material. Remember to preserve your media. Don't edit or delete original content. Make sure to make a copy. So on the Rochester Rapid Response Network's Facebook page, we have a Cognito form that you can submit information that you have witnessed. Make sure to write down details of what you've witnessed while it's fresh in your mind and be as specific as possible. Please share this video during the busy holiday seasons. And if you're interested in getting involved, reach out to the Rochester Rapid Response Network. Stay rad.
All right. So that was a video with some tips, actually really like dense, good amount of tips about doing this witnessing work, about trying to support people who are being targeted by these searches and other actions like them. So I will post a link to their Facebook page. That's kind of the center of where their resources and information are. Obviously, don't use that form to report things in Spokane because it's not for their network, but just a lot to think about, I think, for our local community as well. I have a couple of other things that I don't quite have time to share, but I will share them in the notes for the podcast about specific instances of people using this information and knowing the law and knowing their rights. Combined with, you know, the confidence to step up and the safety to step up and communicate that to these officers that have foiled arrests, that have protected people and kept people safe. So there's really a broad spectrum of strategy here in terms of what folks can do, whether it's, you know, a city organizing, whether it's an individual standing up on the bus and saying, hey, no one has to say anything. Whether it's, you know, I think it's a good time to revisit the Occupy ICE protest that happened last summer that Francisco mentioned in our interview. I don't know if folks remember that, but basically 3 full weeks in Portland, and then those protests spread to other cities of completely blocking the headquarters of the ICE facility there from operating, blocking the cars of employees there. And really it burst into over 50 tents, a very Occupy-esque camp, but, you know, children, old people, workers, activists, kind of everyone together, coming together. And it was right when the first really, really bad evidence of the family separation and the child camps at the border was coming out. So there's a lot of really recent history and then also older history about resisting this kind of thing that we can look to and learn from. So that's the good news. And again, I will post all those links when I post the podcast, which you can find at soundcloud.com/praxisradio, PRAXISRADIO. That's what show you're listening to. If you're tuning in here at the end, on your way into Democracy Now, and you want to hear the rest, you want to hear the interview. And I will just finish the show. I'm starting, just this last couple of weeks, doing an On This Day in History feature, partially inspired by and influenced by some of the great research that Working Class History does. You can find them on Twitter, but also just doing some of my own research. I want to get more into doing local stuff from the week, but today is the day. And this is from Working Class History. The longest strike of school children began in the UK in 1914. They stayed on strike for some time to protest the firing of some of their teachers unjustly. And now, as you may know, the kids everywhere, internationally, inspired by Greta, I cannot remember her last name, are doing school strikes on Fridays to protest the inaction over climate change. So, you know, the kids are all right. They're doing a good job. Also today, also from Working Class History and this blurb of hers from LibCom, the Library of Communism, Julia Hermosilla Sagredo was born in 1916. She lived until 2009, a ripe old age. She was a lifelong Spanish anarchist militant. She fought with the CNT starting from the age of 14, and fought Franco, fought fascism in Spain. She has a really interesting life story that I recommend you look into when I have a little more time to share it with you. I ran out of time on this show. But again, that link, everything else will be posted in the podcast notes, and you can find more at kyrs.org by going to shows, Praxis. You can find everything there. I'll be back next week interviewing David Barsamian, host of Alternative Radio, in advance of his visit to Spokane on April 16th. You can also get tickets for that and find out more on our website as well. So thanks for listening, and I'll be back next week.
Ice, water frozen solid. Ice, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Ice, El Hielo.
Eva pasando el trapo sobre la mesa y está cuidando que todo brille como una perla. Cuando llegue la patrona, que no se vuelva a